This is Stateside from Michigan Radio. I'm Lester Graham. With us now is U.S. Senator Gary Peters. You are on the Senate Armed Services Committee. I want to ask you about this war of words with North Korea. Yesterday, a North Korean official indicated his country might soon test a hydrogen bomb over the Pacific Ocean. And the nation's leader, Kim Jong-un, has called President Donald Trump deranged. Then early this morning, President Trump tweeted, Kim Jong-un of North Korea, who is obviously a madman who doesn't mind starving or killing his people, will be tested like never before. That's the end of that tweet. The name calling might even be kind of funny if we weren't talking about the possibility of nuclear war. What can you tell us about this situation?
Well, Lester, all I can say is it's obviously not helpful to have this kind of exchange of rhetoric back and forth. I'm very disappointed by President Trump that he's engaging in this kind of banter back and forth. I think we've all seen this kind of banter back and forth. We've experienced it when we were in grade school and in middle school, but it certainly doesn't have a place on the world stage, particularly, as you mentioned very wisely, when you're talking about nuclear weapons. So this is very serious business. We need to make sure that we're treating it with the seriousness that it deserves. And that means looking at diplomatic ways to try to reduce the tensions instead of throwing gasoline on them.
Former U.S. Secretary of State and Chairman of the Joint Chiefs of Staff, Colin Powell, visited Ann Arbor this week. He's urging patience and not to overreact to everything North Korea says or does. What do you think of that advice?
Well, I think we do have to be measured. We have to be steady. We do have to be strong. And we have to be working on back channels to make sure that we are talking, let the diplomatic work go on and move forward. We have to make sure the Chinese are fully engaged in this as well. I am encouraged that the Chinese seem to be taking some positive steps. They're the ones that have the most leverage over the North Koreans. I do believe we're starting to see a change in their view that North Korea is becoming a problem for them as well. You know, in the past, their fear of a united Korean peninsula let North Korea do what they want and act a little crazy because they always thought it was in their interest. But now that this has escalated to the point where we're talking about nuclear weapons that destabilize the Pacific Rim in particular, I think the Chinese realize if they're going to be players in that region, this is not in their best interest. They're slowly coming to that realization, the fact that they're now going to make sure their banks are not working in financial transactions with North Koreans is a positive first step. So what we need to be doing is continuing to nurture those very positive steps by the Chinese to bring further pressure on the North Korean government to step back from the line, stop this type of rhetoric, and hopefully put a halt to their weapons program and eventually dismantle it. It's simply unacceptable in today's world to have a North Korea with nuclear weapons.
Having said all that, I'm wondering what advice you would give to President Trump if given the opportunity.
Well, he has to speak in a more diplomatic tone. You know, when you see, back to my analogy about gasoline, when you see some embers, normally the way to get those embers to cool down is not to throw gasoline on them. That's just probably the first step. Don't do that. Act presidential. Act as you are the leader of the most powerful military in the world. Folks know that, but that allows you to act in a much more dignified way, in my mind. And then work through diplomatic channels. Work with the Chinese. Find out how we can bring them on board, working with the world community, also establishing some back channels to the North Koreans. Certainly that's a possibility to do as well. We've got to be able to have some discussions. Without talk in a civilized adult way, this could end very badly, and we've got to prevent that in every way possible.
Let's turn to some legislation in Washington. Everyone seems to agree the Graham-Cassidy health care bill is the Republicans' last chance to repeal and replace the Affordable Health Care Act. What do you think of the contents of the proposal?
Well, I think if you look at the contents of the proposal, it is worse than the last one that went down, where they were not able to get sufficient votes. So it still does a lot of what the last bill did and then some. It'll end Medicaid as we know it. Hundreds of thousands of people in Michigan will lose their health insurance. People with pre-existing conditions may find that they can't afford insurance to deal with those situations. Older Americans will see an increase in their premiums. Basically, all the negative aspects of the last bill still exist in this bill. And that's why we've had a number of governors come out in opposition to it. And I may say a number of Republican governors that said this would be extremely damaging to the people in their state. So it's I just have to step back and scratch my head, is that how are folks who voted no on this bill going to change to a yes when it is actually worse than the bill that they've already voted no on? So I know they're getting tremendous political pressure from the Republican base, and I would just hope that they continue to stay strong and do what's right for the American people.
As I understand this Graham-Cassidy health care bill, it would basically give states a block grant to pay for Medicaid in whatever way they wanted to do on a per capita basis. And some states will win, some states will lose. I'm wondering, where does Michigan land in that?
Well, we're in the loser category, and it's the tune of many billions of dollars. So Michigan is a loser in that category. There are a few that win, as you mentioned. One of those is Alaska. And as you know, the senator from Alaska is one that voted no. So it's a pretty clear attempt to influence the senator of Alaska to change her vote in the fact that her state gets a little more money under this bill. But the bottom line still holds that you're going to have tens of millions of people losing health insurance in this country. We don't have a CBO, which is the Congressional Budget Office score. This is the nonpartisan agency that scores bills and really gives us the in-depth analysis of what we are voting on. They have not come up with that. They said it's going to take a little while to do that. And the Republicans want to rush through and vote on this even before we have that data, although we are very confident that data is going to be similar to the past bills, because this bill actually is worse in so many respects.
At this point, we only know of one Republican who has declared he will not vote for this bill. Is it going to pass?
I think it's unknown at this point. There's a lot of pressure being put on those Republican members who voted no. It'll come to the forefront. I think it's important for people to make sure their voice is heard right now. We have to keep going and asking people to do that, and we have to do it once again. I'm heading to a press conference here in a little bit with health providers, folks who are experts in this area, who are strongly opposed to this bill. They're going to talk about the impact on their patients. We're going to hear from patients themselves and the impact on their lives. People need to make sure that their voice is being heard right now. We are at a absolute critical juncture over the next few days.
You're sponsoring legislation to stop tax dollars from being used to put up employees at the White House and the rest of the executive branch at Trump-owned hotels and resorts. What's your reasoning?
Well, it's not just Trump-owned. It's any kind of property that is owned by either the president, the vice president, or cabinet secretaries or their family members. And this is basically deals with really common sense conflict of interest rules, that if you are a government employee traveling on a taxpayer dime, you shouldn't be staying in properties that are owned by your boss. That's pretty straightforward legislation to protect taxpayers, as well as to protect from any appearance of conflict of interest. But we do know that there are federal employees that stay at Trump properties. They shouldn't feel obligated that they need to go to a Trump property. We had a recent incident of a Coast Guard employee that spent about $1,000 at Mar-a-Lago. No reason that they were staying there. They certainly could have stayed somewhere else much cheaper as well. We do have in the bill, though, an exception for Secret Service and security folks, which need to be close to the president. But other types of government employees do not need to be staying in a very expensive property owned by their boss.
Yeah, is that practical, though, when Trump is often at his resort in Florida or at Trump Tower in New York?
Well, there's no shortage of hotels in New York or southern Florida.
Point taken. So is there a chance at all that Republicans will vote for this?
Well, there is a chance. I work on the Federal Oversight Committee for Federal Spending, and that's out of that capacity that I've introduced this bill and have a number of co-sponsors, but I'll be working with the chair of that committee, Rand Paul. I think we are going to take a look at travel expenses broadly and what we're seeing at the Trump administration. I'm sure you've seen the recent reports of Secretary Price flying on private jets to the tune of several hundreds of thousands of dollars, even though he could have flown commercial, as all of his predecessors have done in the past. So I think travel expenses is something that needs to be looked at, and I'm certainly hoping we can do that in a bipartisan way. It's part of the congressional oversight role. It's what our framers put in place, that Congress should have a oversight role when it comes to dealing with the executive, whoever is in executive office.
Senator, we'll only have a couple of minutes, but the Senate recently approved the National Defense Authorization Act. What does that do for Michigan?
Well, it does a number of things. Certainly, first and foremost, it deals with the national security of our entire country. But I've worked on a number of aspects in that bill and language. One recently that I put into the NDAA, which I hope will help us secure the F-35 fighters at Selfridge. It's something I've been working on with my delegation as well as the community. Selfridge Air National Guard Base is one of the finalists to base the F-35, which is the next generation fighter. And we're hoping that we get selected. When the top two are selected, it'll be a big deal for Michigan. It'll mean that base will be in our state for many decades to come. Plus all of the research and development and engineering associated with the frontline fighter, having it located in Michigan is good for jobs in our state. So I put in some legislation to help facilitate that by moving the A-10s that are currently there, that they can be moved to other bases in order to bring in the F-35. And I hope that the Air Force will make that decision, and that will be good for Michigan in terms of jobs in our position with the ability to get further defense contracts in our state.
That is U.S. Senator Gary Peters. I want to thank you for talking with us.
Oh, always a pleasure. Thank you so much.
That interview was recorded earlier today. Since then, a second Republican senator, John McCain, has stated he'll vote no on the Republican health care bill.